This Weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Who should know? I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
If you test positive for COVID, who are you obligated to tell? And does that change if you're fully vaccinated or boosted? We'll have guidance.
Thinking of joining the Great Resignation, an executive coach is here with tips on finding the courage to take the leap.
How a family in Florida wound up with a Christmas delivery of whiskey posters from 50 years ago that they didn't order.
And relationship advice emerging from the pandemic.
Many people strengthened their relationships during the pandemic. It might be a little surprising sometimes because we've all been cooped up and it hasn't been easy. But if the time together, the experts theorize that the time together helped us, being out in nature helped us.
Elizabeth Bernstein at the Wall Street Journal on real-life relationship help during COVID times. Well, if you're one of the nearly 2 million Americans who tested positive for COVID over the holidays, even though you had both vaccine shots and the booster, what do you do next? After getting over the shock, you may be wondering, do I really have to tell people? Here's Stephen Petro, columnist at USA Today and author of a book called Stupid Things I Won't Do When I Get Old. Stephen, you speak from COVID experience.
Yeah, right before Christmas, I was in the middle of kind of the Christmas rush. I was finishing up my shopping and errands, and I had taken a PCR test because our family was coming together and a family member is immune compromised. And then 2 days before Christmas, it came back positive, and which meant that I had COVID. I was shocked because I was asymptomatic, but it kind of set off a series of questions in my head. Well, what do I do now? You know, part of me just wanted to continue with the plan, although I knew that was wrong. But many people are looking for guidance as to, you know, how do you act? Who do you tell? How do you tell them? Because it's disconcerting news. And also, many of us feel kind of shameful about getting this virus at this point.
So what'd you do? So you look back at like the past several days and say, here's all the people I was in close contact with for what, like 15 minutes at a time or something?
Yeah, you know, the CDC guidance on this is anyone that you've spent 15 minutes or more with, you know, in recent days is a contact that you should consider telling or that you should tell. And so I did. I made this list. It's about 12 or 13 people. I called a couple of them because I know they're not on email very much. And then I emailed the others and explained, you know, explained the situation, explained the test, gave them some information from the CDC as to what it meant for them. That guidance changes, you know, fairly frequently, yeah. So you have to keep up on it. In fact, it's changed since I was diagnosed with COVID. But I wanted to provide information that would be actionable and also prevent anybody from spending the holidays with someone if they were potentially a vector for this condition too.
What kind of reactions did you get when you notified people? Was it, hey, thanks, that's great, or I didn't want to know. Why'd you tell me, Stephen?
You know, I think outwardly everybody was, you know, I'm sorry that you have this. I appreciate you telling me this. One friend of mine, a fellow journalist, said, you know, you're really leading by example here by, you know, being open and upfront about it. I didn't really feel that way, Gordon. I just felt like this is kind of a duty that we have, you know, when you have, you know, you know, in the past, if someone had a contagious condition, you know, whether it's the flu or TB or HIV, you know, you have to tell people if you've put them in some way at risk. That's kind of our obligation as citizens and as members of a community. Not always easy. You know, there are trade-offs. And, I work at home, but I know for a lot of people, you know, who work in office environments and may be paid by the hour, if they tell their employer that they've tested positive, you know, there is a mandatory, you know, quarantine of 5 days right now. It was 10 days at the time. That can be costly.
Yeah. We're speaking with Stephen Petro, columnist at USA Today, also author of a new book called Stupid Things I Won't Do
when I get old. And he's written a piece for USA Today called I Tested Positive for COVID. Do I have to tell people? How do I tell them? You put together, too, like an etiquette recap here. What are the kind of the basic steps we should follow if we test positive?
Yeah, there are three things that people should do, Gordon. First of all, get tested, especially if you're going to any kind of event that will have people who may be at higher risk. That could be the elderly, that could be babies, someone who is ill. And it's always a great idea if you can volunteer and go do this rather than have to be asked to do it. And of course, that's the caveat, if you can find a place to buy a test or get a test. Number two is, if you test positive, disclose it. According to the CDC rules, anyone you've been in close contact with that's 6 feet or under for more than 15 minutes, you have an obligation to tell them. No ands, ifs, or buts, and stop the spread. This information is how we can begin to control the Omicron variant, which is just spreading out of control everywhere.
I thought it was interesting, too. There was a point in your story in which somebody said, in some cases, people think it's okay to stay mum about Omicron because it's less virulent.
You know, I talked to some friends who did feel that way. You know, nobody's going to die from it, one hopes. You know, the early data is that there are fewer hospitalizations and there are fewer deaths. I think it's important to like turn it around. How would you feel if you were not told? I think all of us would like to have that information, or most of us would like to have that information so that we could act on it and so that we might test and protect others.
What about people who say, hey, well, that's a private thing for me?
You know, I'm a big believer in health privacy. And like, for instance, I've had cancer. Cancer is not a contagious or an infectious disease. There's no reason for someone who has a condition like that or a heart condition to tell anybody because it doesn't make a difference to the other person. But when you have a condition or an illness that can make someone sick, that can be transmitted, you have that obligation. I talked to a couple of ethicists who I'm going to say they agreed with me. I agree with them. They were the experts here.
Thanks, Stephen. Stephen Petro, columnist at USA Today. Coming up next, getting the courage to resign.
What are your 2022 business goals? Simplified IT? More security? Dell Technologies has the expertise to help you. From transforming your digital workspaces to providing comprehensive end-to-end IT solutions, get high-performance computers featuring Windows 11 Pro with powerful hardware-based security and savings up to 45% during Dell's New Year event sale. Get special financing through Dell Financial Services. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. You've heard that a record 4.5 million people left their jobs in November, and you may wish that you were one of them. But there are these things called bills that tend to pile up, right? Fortune reports that the majority of professionals leave their jobs to have more control over their lives, with 32% saying they quit to start their own business. How to Do It from Kate Ekman, executive coach and author of a book called The Full Spirit Workout. Kate, help us out.
I think people are realizing that life is short and the world is in turmoil. And if there was ever a time to leave the unhappy relationship, job, whatever it is, now is the time, and that our gifts and strengths could possibly be more utilized and better served in another position. And so I think people now have the confidence and courage, especially with wages going up and with the jobs increasing, that, hey, why not? And let me do what's going to make me happy, and really prioritizing our health, especially our mental health, and spending quality time with loved ones.
I'm always amazed at these stats, right? Was it like 4.5 million people left their jobs in November? Generally speaking, do those folks have another job lined up already, or are they actually winging it and saying, I'll give the 2 weeks notice, sit on that pay, and then find something in the meantime? What's the usual practice here?
I think there's a mix of both. I think a lot of people are starting their own businesses and they've wanted to do it for a really long time. And I think they're seeing counterparts who are very successful in doing this. And a lot of people have actually done very well during the pandemic. And so they're thinking, why not give it a shot? I do recommend having a plan going into that. And instead of focusing on ooh, what may go wrong, really focusing on the possibilities and opportunities and seeking out support and asking other people what's worked for them, what hasn't. But I think the main message I'd like to give people is to have a really strong why, whether you're going to stay or whether you're going to leave, change industries, whatever it is if you have a really, really strong why, so that's your purpose, that's why this is important to you right now, that will get you to the how. So then your action steps will be easier to take and you'll have more courage and confidence.
Got it. Where does the fear come from?
I think that's part of our culture, sadly, is that you're always being bombarded with, well, what if? And so that is, again, about our worldview. And if your worldview is, I can't leave a job until I have another job, or what if this horrible thing happens, or I'm not going to be able to pay my bills, that's often what people see. But if your worldview is, I don't have to have another job lined up to leave this job, or it's easy to find new work, and really focusing on the value that you bring and your unique skill set, then you're going to have more confidence and you're going to be less fearful. But that's just a product of our culture. And so I do recommend spending some time alone and some quiet time and really reflecting and really tuning into the strengths that you can leverage and really how you can leverage that confidence and the service of hopefully a cause greater than yourself and your bottom line.
We're speaking with Kate Ekman, executive coach, also author of a book called The Full Spirit Workout. We're talking about the courage to pursue another job in this period we're calling the Great Resignation. So you referenced you need the confidence. You got to get the confidence. How do you do it? How do you acquire that?
Yeah, I think so much of it is really trusting your gut, your intuition, whatever you want to call it. If you're a person of faith, trusting in a higher power that you're being guided and supported. And I think having a purpose greater than yourself certainly boosts your confidence. So the days that you can't show up for yourself, you can show up for your family or the organization or your team, something serving other people. I think also we have to be more present. When we're present and not freaking out about the future or dwelling in the past, we're more confident. And this is also showing up with presence, showing up like you mean it and you have something to say. I think patience and trusting the process will certainly boost your confidence, and being prepared and practicing. I think of Tom Brady a lot because we are both Big Ten athletes at the same time and he's still winning Super Bowls and my knees hurt when I go to Pilates. So I bow down to you, Tom Brady, but he's at this level of success because he is prepared and he practices harder than anyone, not because he's the worst, but because he's the best.
Interesting. How come your knees hurt? You're a swimmer.
I guess I'm much better in water than on land.
Very good. Any other points you wanted to make?
I think I just really want to invite people or encourage people to lean more into their talents and their gifts and their strengths. I think we do spend so much time focusing on or dwelling upon the things that we aren't good at or where we don't add up or the dumb thing that we said, rather than really paying a lot of attention to our greatness and reminding people that you are powerful, you can achieve whatever you deem worthy, and you really can do whatever you decide is important enough.
Thanks, Kate. Kate Ekman, executive coach and author of a book called The Full Spirit Workout. Coming up next, relationship advice during pandemic times. Hey, thanks for being with us. Many relationships have thrived during the pandemic, surprisingly. Researchers are still unpacking why this is. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
How have you strengthened your relationship since 2020? Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal asked some journal readers and is here now with some feedback. Elizabeth, it wasn't all bad on the relationship front, was it?
No. In fact, research shows that many people strengthened their relationships during the pandemic. It might be a little surprising sometimes because we've all been cooped up and it hasn't been easy, but if the time together... The experts theorize that the time together helped us, being out in nature helped us, and also something kind of surprising, blaming the pandemic on our stress rather than each other helped us.
Accepting alone time, how did that work out?
Oh, well, people realize that they had time to themselves, and this can recharge themselves. They can spend more quality time with their partner, with their family, and that was very different from our go, 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 run all the time life.
We talked about it early in the pandemic that people started connecting with friends and family members via Zoom and making calls they normally wouldn't. How did that bring people closer?
Well, I think, we had this time to be intentional, and we missed people in a way that maybe we didn't before. When we're running around, we're going to work, we're getting a lot of social activity and interactions, and now we had time to think about who do I want to miss? Who do I miss? Who do I want to put back into my life? Let's call that person.
And some people you actually decided maybe you didn't need to make time for.
You know, that's another thing. You can get rid of some of the people that we might not have enjoyed all the time, or just people who we saw a lot and, you know, they were there, maybe a friend, you know, they're close by, or coworkers. We got to shift who we spent time with, too. Of course, we were, you know, kind of together in it with our nearest and dearest, but also we could lose the people that are a little more on the periphery to us and put back in people we wanted to.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, you also found that marriage is strengthened by people pausing when things got heated. People listen to each other more.
I went ahead and asked readers of my column, which is about relationships, what they found during the pandemic, what helped them strengthen. And not surprisingly, or maybe surprisingly, the most amount of people came back and said space. We gave each other space. Even though we're cooped up together, we managed to build in that space in our relationship. We weren't together 24/7.
Talk about marriages and what people found made their marriage better.
Okay, so I asked readers, you know, knowing that some people strengthen their relationship during the pandemic, I asked them why. How do they do this? What was the best thing they did? And the most amount of people came back with the answer they gave space in their relationship. So even though they were cooped up together, they built some space into it. They did things separately. They had different interests. Sometimes they were even in the same house, but somebody was upstairs watching a ball game and somebody was downstairs watching a movie. And so in this way, they both got a little time apart, got time to breathe where they weren't having to be responsible for each other, but also they had something new to talk about when they came back.
What is the importance of being in nature and being outside?
Nature is so important to us. There's so much research that shows that when we're out in nature, one thing that we feel is this feeling of awe. It's a feeling that something's larger than ourselves. There's a tremendous amount of research that shows how important it is to our health, our mental health as well. And so I think that's one thing. We get out in nature. We get out of our own heads. We can breathe. We're moving usually when we're in nature, so it's healthy. And again, you have something to talk about.
Did any of the feedback you get surprise you?
Yes, I talked to some people who, it was interesting. What surprised me is how careful people are about these things. They are doing their relationship strategies with great intent. They're not just winging it out there. So I talked to somebody who said he always tries to assume the positive about someone else. He never assumes that they have negative motivations. And that is really important because he's doing it consistently. It's not once in a while he remembers to do it. He's very consistent in it.
And are these things that may last post-pandemic?
They're very good. They're the tried and true strategies that these people are using.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal columnist Elizabeth Bernstein. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Uncomfortable work attire is a thing of the past. If you're still trapped in suits and ties, make it your New Year's resolution to go casual at work. But don't dress down. Get some casual style that fits anywhere. That's what Cuts Clothing is designed for, to fit you and any occasion perfectly. That's how I feel about my t-shirts from Cuts. They look and feel great. Buttery soft. They move with me whenever I'm at the mic or at the gym. And while I could go on about their custom-engineered Pika Tri-Blend fabric, you really have to wear it to understand how soft it is. It's the ultimate blend of high-quality cotton, polyester, and spandex. The result is what GQ magazine calls the only shirt worth wearing. And now it's worth even more because it's an even better value. Cuts Clothing is work leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S. cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Glad you could be with us. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, when three vaccine shots are not enough. Also, money tasks to remove from your to-do list. Plus, chicken thighs on restaurant menus and a bizarre Christmas delivery from the post office. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, people with compromised immune systems are getting unapproved fourth or fifth COVID shots despite uncertainty about their safety or effectiveness. It's a story by Amanda Morris, reporting fellow at the New York Times. Amanda, what have you found?
Yeah, so a lot of immunocompromised people are really unsure of how to protect themselves right now. Many of them did not generate antibodies after two or three shots, which basically means that they don't know whether they have any protection against the virus. So they have to act as if they're unvaccinated. And a lot of them, after 2 years, are getting really tired of being stuck in their homes. So they're really trying anything they can to try to protect themselves and try to return to some semblance of normalcy.
So I was fascinated by the woman you profiled in the story early on, this Stacey Ricks, right? She's a kidney transplant recipient. She's up to what, five shots? How does she do that?
Yeah, it's actually a lot easier than you might think. Several people I spoke to got extra shots way early on in April and May before booster shots were even approved for anybody. And essentially what she did was she just pretended that it was her first shot when she got her third shot. And at the time, you might remember the beginning of the vaccination in the United States was a little chaotic. I don't know how well databases were reflecting people getting their shots, especially across state lines or in different counties or cities. Mm. So Stacey essentially went and got a dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine as her third shot, and she still didn't develop antibodies after that. So then in July, she went back to another pharmacy to get a fourth and a fifth shot. And by that point, it was actually a little trickier because the pharmacy records did show her prior shots at that point. So she had to convince the pharmacist to give her another shot. And she did that by having a note from her doctor that explained that she hadn't really developed antibodies and that her fourth and fifth shots were acting more like a first and second shot.
Jeez. So this Stacey Ricks, at the pharmacy, the pharmacist says, this is risky. Nobody's approved this. And she says, basically, you're welcome. Yeah, I'm your data. I'll help you keep track of what happens to me with my fourth and fifth shot, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting because Mrs. Rick's doctor, when she asked, should I go get more shots? Her doctor was like, well, it can't hurt. Like, do whatever you need to do to protect yourself. And she had told the pharmacist, who was very hesitant, saying, there's no clinical data here. She said, hey, I am the clinical data. And this has been the case, actually, with other immunocompromised patients I talked to, such as Chris Neblett. He was enrolled in a Johns Hopkins study on organ transplant patients. And he went and got a third shot in April, way before it was approved. And the data that he gave Johns Hopkins after he got his third shot actually helped the CDC and the FDA make a decision on whether or not they should approve a third shot for everybody.
Wow.
And, he's gone and gotten a fourth shot already. And Johns Hopkins has been tracking his immune system response after each shot as part of the study.
We're speaking with Amanda Morris, disability reporting fellow at the New York Times. Her piece is called When Three Shots Are Not Enough. And there's nothing illegal about that, right?
So if you're talking about vaccine providers, they've actually signed a legal agreement with the CDC to provide vaccines according to the CDC's guidelines. So if the vaccine providers knowingly disobey those rules, they could face legal repercussions. But for the patients themselves, I talked to several lawyers who say there's nothing illegal about the patients getting the extra shots. The only potential risk would be not knowing what the extra shots are going to do and whether there's any side effects of that. And if a vaccine provider decides to file a civil lawsuit against them for lying, that's a possibility, but it's a really slim possibility that they would actually do that.
Mm. Finish up with Israel. They're doing this now?
Yeah, so Israel on Sunday announced that they're going to be approving four shots, and they've approved four shots for people who are over the age of 60, as well as some medical workers. And many people over the age of 60 are also immunocompromised or just don't have as strong of a response to the vaccine.
Thanks, Amanda. Amanda Morris, reporting fellow at the New York Times. Coming up next, money tasks you should not do in 2022.
What are your 2022 business goals? Simplified IT, more security? Dell Technologies has the expertise to help you. From transforming your digital workspaces to providing comprehensive end-to-end IT solutions, get high-performance computers featuring Windows 11 Pro with powerful hardware-based security and savings up to 45% during Dell's New Year event sale. Get special financing through Dell Financial Services. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Hey, thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Financial to-do lists, as you know, are everywhere this time of year, and it's always smart to check on the rules around charitable giving or set financial goals for the new year. Knowing what to skip, though, is just as important. So consider this list of suggestions from Veronica Dagger, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Veronica, step one.
Well, you know, there's a couple tips we gave people. You know, the first thing is don't rush to pay off your low-interest mortgage. You know, inflation's predicted to rise. Paying off the fixed-rate mortgage that you have ahead of schedule, that might not make sense for your finances these days. You know, for example, it might be better off to take an extra $10,000 and put that towards a new Series I savings bond. You can make, you know, an annualized over 7% rate on one of those bonds. Now, if you have a 3% fixed mortgage, this makes good financial sense.
Also, don't overpay for items because supplies are limited. That phrase.
Right. Yeah. You know, that instills stress in people. Supplies are limited. You get these text messages from companies saying you need to buy now. There's only two left. You know, try your best to not to succumb to the pressure. You know, there are shipping delays. There are shortages. But first, ask yourself the difference between a want and a need. Do you really need those last pair of PJs that are allegedly the retailer has? But also think about, you know, how panic buying or snagging something just in case, how it can undermine your budget overall. That can really eat into your savings and your financial goals if you're always buying at the last minute. Now, there are rising prices, of course, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't shop around for the best price possible or ask for the discount or even find a less expensive alternative.
We're speaking with Veronica Dagger, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Stop Tracking Spending and Other Money Tasks to Take Off Your To-Do List, looking at 2022. I know that I would venture to guess a vast majority of personal finance advisors just fell off their chair when they saw your headline that said, don't track your spending. what's their reasoning there?
Right. Well, you know what? This can be like a crash diet. Like people start the new year, I'm going to track every single dollar. And the next thing you know, you're going crazy and you're just giving up. So instead of going so extreme, take a broader approach. Think about maybe taking a simple approach like designating 50% of your paycheck to essentials like rent or your car note, 20% for savings, and 30% for everything else. That 30%, then you're not having to nickel and dime and keep track of everything. You can also just do an automatic transfer to set aside your savings each month to or each paycheck to a high-yield online savings account. That way, you automate your bills, you automate your savings, and then everything that's left essentially goes to whatever you want. You don't have to sit there and calculate every last coffee that you bought.
Right. Takes away the guilty feeling, I guess, to a certain extent.
Right. Yeah. Takes away the guilty feeling and makes you feel a little bit more empowered.
Right. The final point here, too, don't fall prey to FOMO. It's a little bit about the falling to pressure that you mentioned earlier, but explain FOMO.
Right. I know. So this fear of missing out, you know, you hear all these headlines about cryptocurrencies or the latest hot stock on Reddit and you feel like, oh, I got to jump in. Well, the fact is, it may not be the best move for you to jump in, you know, because hot stocks, if you chase them, that often leads to underperformance in your returns as their outperformance won't last forever. Also, you know, a time-tested strategy such as a low-cost, well-diversified investment portfolio of stocks and bonds can really serve you well, along with living below your means, of course. So these trends like NFTs or SPACs or cryptocurrencies, if they're not a fit for your investing goals, you don't have to buy them. If you don't understand something, it makes sense not to buy it, because if you do, your risk and your chance of loss is greater.
Thanks, Veronica. Veronica Dagger, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the new popular item on restaurant menus. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do.
Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
Hey, glad you're with us. Watch for menu changes at your favorite restaurants. Short supplies and escalating costs of chicken breast and wings are leading restaurants to add thighs and other dark poultry meat. Insight from Patrick Thomas, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Patrick, what's the current scenario?
What we're seeing is short supplies, escalating costs of chicken breasts and wings. Two of the most popular elements of chicken have been going up, and it's leading restaurants and to add thighs and other dark poultry meats to menus and entrees. Typically, thighs are just less popular than the boneless white meat breasts that a lot of restaurants have offered in the past and that a lot of consumers buy. And right now the prices are going up because of short supplies, and these higher costs are just leading restaurants to add other sorts of chicken parts to their menus, if you will.
What are those costs like these days?
Well, we've seen a pretty dramatic increase over the past year. Chicken breasts especially were priced at under a pound in December of 2020, in late December 2020, and now it's well over $2 a pound, so more than doubled, according to market research from Erner Berry. And thighs. Thighs have also gone up, but it's from 26 cents a year earlier to 54 cents.
You said, too, that there are two advantages for restaurants when it comes to thighs. Explain that.
Yeah, products like thighs do have two advantages for the restaurant struggling with higher costs. Basically, they're cheaper and easier to get. The main one is that they're cheaper and easier to get.
What are we seeing now in terms of changes on menus as restaurants begin to make changes and adjust here?
Yeah, absolutely. So broadly, mentions of thighs on U.S. menus have gone up in comparison to what they were before. They're still pretty rare, but for example, at Wing It On, a 10-unit chain specializing in chicken, executives developed a plan to diversify its poultry supplies. Prices soared. Their CEO has mentioned that while wings are very coveted by restaurants and suppliers, they've made an effort to incorporate other ways, and their whole bird strategy, as they call it, and incorporate other parts of the chicken that maybe they wouldn't have before, or give them better terms for. They began selling thigh wings, for example, in addition to their traditional offerings. So basically what that means is they're trying to get more creative. And Wingstop, remember, there was kind of an uproar when they launched a menu offering more chicken thigh products. That was a big deal when they kind of geared away from their signature wings. It's now Thighstop was kind of their big marketing rollout.
And then behind the scenes, the likes of Perdue and Tyson, what are they doing?
Well, so Tyson has basically said that its dark meat products is growing from the people who buy it from the restaurants and the consumers who buy their chicken. Tyson, one of the largest meat processors, has said its boneless dark meat chicken products is growing in demand. And Perdue has also said that it has seen a 15% increase in its boneless thigh sales in 2021, a 20% increase in ground chicken, which is made mostly of dark meat. They said that demand has been spectacular over the past year. So the meat processors are seeing it, and they have an incentive to emphasize their thighs and similar products beyond just the fact that these products are cheaper. Typically, meat processors export thighs. They're more popular in other countries than the U.S. That's just traditionally how it's been. And they've been growing steadily now over in demand, and because of the price of the chicken breast, which is typically more popular here in the U.S., they've been able to really start selling their thighs as opposed to exporting it overseas for a cheaper cost.
Wow. We're speaking with Patrick Thomas, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called Pricey Chicken Puts Thighs on Restaurant Menus. Finish up with the impact that our cooking from home the past year and a half or so has had on this.
Yeah, just generally, and even speaking for myself, I mean, I've made chicken thighs more often over the past couple of years. It's just kind of, it's a different thing. We're seeing more consumers try to make different meals and mix things up as they're working from home. And the chicken thigh, it's cheaper. It's typically known for its taste. It's just kind of got a different texture to it. At Purdue, they say consumers right now just want to make more creative, better tasting meals. And sometimes the chicken thigh can offer that.
That's Patrick Thomas, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a bizarre delivery for a Florida family. Well, how about this? A family in Lake Worth, Florida says it got a surprise post-Christmas delivery in the form of two packages left at their doorstep by the post office. What made it truly unexpected? The packages were postmarked in 1971 and were addressed to a previous owner of their home. Adding to the bizarre tale, when the family opened the packages the day after Christmas, they found the shipment contained psychedelic-inspired posters, very much in the popular style of a half century ago, promoting cocktails made with Southern comfort. The family members told MarketWatch that the whole scenario was almost like stepping into a time warp. There's a complicated story of how this may have happened, with the posters being passed down, then forgotten about, then sold on eBay, then lost. The posters have some value as a collectible, by the way, and can be found on auction sites. One is currently listed on eBay for $99.95, with the sellers describing it as being in the style of Peter Max, the famed pop artist who became popular in the 1960s. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.